Hi, I'm Michael Katz. I'm the creator and writer of Riot Herp, Metalhead, Golden Years, and now Horror Show on Kickstarter. You can find me at Twitter at StriderNolan13 and at Instagram at Michael S. Katz. And you are watching and listening to Two Geeks Talking, although this time we've got three geeks.
Hi, I'm Daryl Banks, creator of various creative works such as Horror Show, an artist on the graphic novel. You can find me on social media. I'm on Twitter, X, as @RealBankster, and I'm also on Instagram as GL Prime. As far as websites, I also have a gallery at Comic Art Fans. And you're watching and listening to Two Geeks Talking.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, everyone. Two Geeks Talking is an entertainment industry interview show where we interview the creative people from the comic, film, TV, movie, and video game industries. And of course, I'm your host, Kurt Sasso. We are joined today by not one, but two very talented individuals here today. We are, of course, talking with a returning guest, with Michael S. Katz and Daryl Banks, who is a new timer to the show, bringing us Horror Show. So how are you both doing today?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Doing good, Kurt.
Five timers is just around the corner, so your next project's coming up pretty soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, it will be.
For those that don't know anything about yourselves as creative people, tell us who you are and what you're bringing to Two Geeks Talking.
All right, well, I'll go first, since I'm the unknown. I've been doing comics for about 3 years now. I've been doing publishing since 2000, and I've written a few novels of my own. But I've done a lot of editing of other people's stuff. So this makes my seventh comic, I believe, and my first with Daryl Banks.
My name is Daryl Banks, and people may know me as a illustrator of comics, particularly with DC Comics, with a character known as Green Lantern. This year, I'll celebrate my 35th year in the comic book industry. Feels like it's only been 36 years. But yeah, this is my first complete story with Michael, although we did work together on a graphic novel of his creation called Riot Herp.
Right.
And it's great that we can team up once again on something that's a little bit different than what I'm known for, something in the horror genre.
What is the most misunderstood aspect about the horror genre in comics that people who don't follow it misunderstand?
It's tough to do. It's I've heard that they're popular. I think they're rare, and being a writer, I can see why, because it's really tough writing one. It's hard to get scares on a piece of paper when you don't have unlimited words to use.
For me, it was more or less because I'm used to the, as they say, the sun-drenched superhero type of imagery. And that's one of the things that attracted me to this project. I asked myself, can I do it? So I thought, what makes something scary? And I don't think it's necessarily the cause of what someone's afraid of. For example, a child might be afraid of the boogeyman. If the boogeyman were to actually show up, I don't think that's the horror. I think the horror is they think there's a boogeyman under the bed or in the closet. You know what I mean? So how do I convey that, like Michael said, in a still picture that doesn't move? And there is the challenge.
I usually get scared when I see the taxes taken away from my paycheck. That's usually my
And that is
fear.
pretty scary, isn't it?
Michael, let's talk about the inspiration behind Horror Show and its evolution, because I think that's an important concept, because I don't think we've talked about horror when you've been on the show in the past.
No, this is my first horror book. Well, I mean, everything I do is centered around characterization. Horror Show is no different. And like any project, I jump back and forth when I'm writing. I don't write scene one, then scene two, then scene three. So what originally came to me in this particular project was the ultimate battle between man and monster. Then I had to go back and I had to flesh out the hero. Then I had to flesh out the monster and its background. At all times, I had to kind of think of different levels of horror, to keep the reader entertained.
And I was entertained. I read through it, and thanks for
Right.
the version as well. And traditionally, 24 pages is part of a comic, but I don't think you could have really told the story in 24 pages. So I'm glad that you went to 48.
Yeah, I wanted I wanted this to be a one and done graphic novel. You know, some people have read it and said that they hope that the character, you know, comes back. And maybe one day, you know, he will. But for now, you can read Horror Show and be done with Horror Show and like it so much, you'll read it again.
But it also helps that Daryl, of course, you know, being an amazing artist that you are, your artistic journey has evolved, I'm sure, when you first started to what you're currently working on. You know, looking at your style as how it's evolved, how have you changed as an artist over the years, and what do you believe is your unique touch when you create art?
One of my first writers I ever worked with when I began in 1989, he said my art had, I believe the word was verisimilitude, which means, I guess, lifelike quality. I don't really consider my work photorealistic because it's not, but then it's not cartoony either. So my approach is to feel lifelike. So it's more like inspired from, you know, from life as much as possible, but still having, you know, some signature flares that I may put into my work that makes it unique, hopefully. Like you mentioned, it's a journey. It's not something where I feel like I've sit back and go, all right, this is the way I can draw from here on out. I'm pretty much good now. Like, no, I'm always thinking, how can I make it better, more unique, and more appealing?
What flares are your unique style?
I don't really feel that I can answer that. I think that's something that it would have to be, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Like how someone would, the opinion that they would have. And honestly, I've never really had anyone really sit down and tell me what that is. People normally talk about they like what I've drawn, not so much how I've drawn it. And I'd be kind of interested to know.
I think for me, in looking at Horror Show, it was the action and the colors. I think how you portrayed the action, especially in the later scenes, I'm not going to spoil it. I'll let Michael do that.
Color was handled by different artists. I just did the black and white. I have to give the colorist, you know, his...
Which we'll talk about actually is one okay. of the questions, because we want to give proper credit where credit is due.
Right, right.
Please. But from an action standpoint, from a panel to panel standpoint, I think it was... The framing was perfect. It felt like an episode of Fargo, but it also felt like it had a bit of, I'd say, Rambo inspirations to it as well. I think there was something that just really just kind of sucked me in as I was going. It wasn't just a, oh, I know how the story is going to end. It was a, what is this character, which we'll talk about, going to do?
Mm-hmm. So. Well, I mean, that's what I want, is to keep you engaged so that the art isn't overpowering the story, but it enhances it. You know, it's a collaborative effort.
Speaking of characters, Michael, obviously you've created the amazing character of Ben Horowitz, who is the main character of this fun series.
Right.
Looking at this experience, you know, it felt authentic, especially with the PTSD and how you really portrayed the character from beginning to end. You know, how did that come about, and why is that an important thing for you to dive into?
Well, how did it come about? A lot of research. You don't want to just make every character yourself. You know, you don't want, you know, be writing Mary Sue characters into every story you do. Every element of Ben Horowitz's character came from somewhere. Yeah, I didn't create him out of thin air. I kind of put him together like a Frankenstein monster from bits and pieces of other people. Characters, other characters in the, you know, film and TV. And then, you know, for most of us, you do have to put a little bit of yourself into it when you do write. So, you know, I may not be a Vietnam vet, or, you know, I may not have PTSD, but how would I act if I did? How would I act if I was in that situation? That's how you keep things realistic.
When you were creating this particular story, though, like you said, you don't start from beginning to end. You kind of piece it together as you go. And I think that's a great approach to writing when it comes to character development and world building. I think that helps as well when you have a talented artist like Daryl, too, as well as the amazing colorist that you had in regards to that. But looking at the journey then of this character from beginning to end, how did that character evolve, and are you happy with its end result?
Oh, I'm definitely happy with its end result. You know, I've been given credit for more things than I realized I had put into the book. You know, I've been told that the story has, you know, multiple levels of horror, and that's what I was shooting for. And it's not easy writing a horror book, so, you know, you want to include a variety. You don't want just one or two jump scares and that be it. So this book, you know, it goes, you know, from the in-your-face supernatural to the everyday horrors that people face on a personal scale. I think you need that balance to ground the book, you know, make it realistic so that, you know, people can more believably read about the stuff that doesn't happen every day when they can feel for the stuff that does happen every day or can happen every day.
Who is the team that's, obviously we have Daryl, but who is the full team in regards to creating horror show?
Daryl and I, of course. And then my colorist is Julio Santos. He's been my go-to guy on everything except Riot Earp. I just love his work. I like to think I found him because he wasn't doing a whole lot when I came across him. And I just thought, you know, his stuff was terrific. Then for letters, we got Keith Champagne acting under the nom de plume of Alfie Betts. And Keith just does an awesome job. I mean, Keith's only been doing lettering for a couple of years, and he's amazing at it. And it's an unsung quality to be a good letterer.
You know, seeing both you and Daryl working on something like this and bringing in so many talented people, I think it's a great testament to your creation as a writer and as a person that's trying to promote the arts to the best of his ability.
Yeah, I'm not a household name. Yeah, I'm not a household word. So what I got to do is bring as much quality to every product I put out as possible. Yeah, and you're going to get quality. You're going to get the best story I can do. And that's why I have editors, get the best art I can find, best colors, best lettering, best paper that the book is printed on. You're going to be happy front to back.
The supernatural elements are a nice touch, I think. And when it comes to balancing the supernatural, especially with this type of story, can you give specific instances where you felt that the interactions between Ben and the Wendigo added depth to the story, whether it was from a writing standpoint or from an artistic standpoint?
Okay, all right. I was going to say that, you know, actually, you know, Ben and the monster don't interact, you know, more than once. They do have something in common, and I don't want to ruin that. I don't want to ruin surprise, but they're, yeah, it makes for two additional smaller horror beats in the book, because I wanted each character to intentionally have horror in their own backstory, and you know, not just for shock value, but to give the reader some shorthand into the characters and who they are, because I think, you know, like I said before, characterization is so important that you need good fleshed out characters to make a book that will stick with someone.
I think with the Wendigo, what separates it from, you know, let's say your run-of-the-mill monster is, it's like Michael had said, there's characterization there. It's a monster, but there is a why. If you read the story, you'll see it's not, oh, it's a monster, that's what they do. They kill people. It's got a little bit more than that. And I think that the readers will discover that, especially when we dig into its origins.
I know you guys don't want to go into spoiler territory with that, so right. I'm not going to push more on that particular question. But let's look at the collaboration that you both have worked on with each other, and specifically with Horror Show. Michael, what was the first piece of artwork you got from Daryl that just blew your mind away? And Daryl, when you were reading the script, what was the first image that came to mind that you were like, I have to just draw this right now?
When it comes to drawing, I was taught, even though he doesn't remember, the legendary inker Terry Austin once told me that when you're working from a script, try not to read the whole thing at once unless you're going to lay out the whole thing at once. And I knew I wasn't. I was going to do it in sections. So that's how I did the layout. I didn't, in other words, as I'm working on it, I'm reading it. I felt like if my reaction is, oh, now that's interesting, I think the fans are going to love that. Hopefully I conveyed that artistically, my genuine reaction when I see something in the script and go, okay, now it's the image, the first image that pops into my head. I want to communicate that graphically. That was, you know, I think the benefit of doing the layouts as I'm reading it, instead of just reading it all the way through, then coming back and then start doing the layouts. Because then I think I'm starting to second guess, what should I draw? As Terry had showed me, is that usually the first image that pops into your head is the correct answer, and usually the freshest one. And that's why I approached it in that manner.
I think Darryl did amazing work. I mean, the first thing he did, obviously, was draw the creature. But then he would turn in a page at a time. And, you know, when I write, I'm cinematic in nature. I mean, I can do a little bit of drawing myself. So I'm artistic, and I can imagine what a book should look like or what a scene should look like and how it should play out. And then when I write the panels down and I give them to Darryl and they come back, you know, like fully fleshed out, just as I'd imagine them, you know, it's just a big wow to me every time I see a new page.
I like this collaboration, the fact that you work together with each other on Riot Earp and now on to this particular horror show story. What is it about working with each other that just excites you to keep creating?
I love Darryl's art. I mean, the Riot Earp story was written by Ron Morris, who is the editor of Horror Show. I got to see Darryl's stuff, but I didn't get to direct it like I do now. You know, I'm the director. He's my cinematographer. and again, it's that cinematic feel of everything coming together that it just makes it more exciting. Yeah. And Darryl and I, you know, we built a good rapport while creating the book. You know, he did a great job of reading the story and, you know, giving me exactly what I was looking for in my mind's eye.
I could tell that Horror Show, I mean, obviously everything that you produce means a lot to you, but I felt like Horror Show felt a little bit more on a personal level, and I took that to heart. I mean, even though I give everything I do 100%, but this, I thought it felt more of a legacy project, something that you want to, you know, look back on your career when it's all said and done and go, you know, I did a lot of things, but Horror Show, I wanted to make sure that if I was going to be a part of that, I had to make it worth as well.
Speaking of Ron Mars, do you both have a story about your first interactions with them or a fun story that's helped you creatively?
I'm sure Darryl has plenty of stories.
Oh, sure, sure. It's pretty long. I mean, working with Ron, I mean, even though I had been in the industry half a decade before we worked together on Green Lantern, Ron, working with him was different from other writers because he really had an artistic what it was going to look like. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, when you live in that part of New York around a time when, you know, when he was younger, it was Jim Starlin and Bernie Wrightson and so many other, you know, creative giants. Even though he's a writer, you know, you can't be around that level of Mount Rushmore artists and not think visually. And I think when he writes, he's thinking what this is going to look like, not just what the story we're telling. And I picked up on that very early on when we first started working together. And, you know, with Green Lantern, that was, you know, it was such a wide open, I would imagine very similar to when Martin Goodman told Stan Lee, all right, this amazing fantasy book isn't doing that well. I don't care what you do with it. You know, have fun. And so that's almost what we were dealing with Green Lantern. So working with Ron, you know, he's a really good writer, not to swell his head, but I like the fact that he thinks very visually. And of course that works with me very well as an artist.
Yeah, Ron has edited most of my comics work. Keith Champagne did Metalhead, and, you know, Ron has done the rest. I wanted to have prose involved to make sure I was doing the right thing. I was used to writing novels where you get to use as many words as you need to make an impact. Comics are much more limited, so I wanted to have professionals guide me through any pitfalls. The one thing that Ron thought was important was to make sure that everything I wrote maintained my voice and, you know, didn't get changed to his voice somewhere in the process.
The fun of working with professionals, they have their experiences and expertise, and whether or not you learn from it consciously or subconsciously, I think it improves yourself as a creative person.
Well, definitely. It's not an easy business, you know, and you need all the help you can get. I'll put it like that.
This is not your first rodeo when it comes to Kickstarters. What insights and lessons have you learned from when we first spoke about Riot Earp to your current Kickstarter with Horror Show that you're excited about?
This comic is different in terms of some other stuff because sex sells, especially on Kickstarter. Not safe for work content sells big. You know, my last book, Metalhead, had over 330 backers, and, you know, Riot Earp, which has sexual situations, has had over 300 backers. And I just hope that those people come out for Horror Show because they're going to get another great book. It may not have sex or nudity, but it stands on its own as a powerful book. It's still for mature audiences. And, you know, people are definitely going to enjoy it if they read it. We have a variant cover by an artist named David Diaz. Got a nice, very lifelike quality to his work. We've got pinups. And most important of all, we've got commissions from Daryl Banks himself.
Best of all worlds.
I think so.
Daryl, looking at your work as an artist here, what was an early experience where language had power?
Well, I think it always has power. When you have a medium that, you know, that isn't moving, you have to have, really, it's got to be entertaining. And there are different ways to entertain. It's not always, you know, large, explosive, flamboyant. It's got to be interesting. And sometimes it's in subtle things. I think about the work of the great John Buscema. You know, he's known for many different things. But I think about images that he's made, like a classic picture of Loki just sitting in the throne, but just kind of weight shifted more on one elbow. Those subtle things. And so powerful. You know, Mephisto on a throne, just not used doing his normal cacking. It's almost like he was thinking about something, that sort of thing. There are different ways to have that visual language, and it conveys, as long as it relates to the story and you're really trying to get a point across. Tell the story. That's the important thing with the visual language.
Do you have three artists that have inspired your career from when you first started to your current level of expertise?
Well, more than three. there are artists that inspire me and there are artists that influence me. And what's the difference? Well, there are artists that my art looks nothing like, but they inspire me, like Arthur Adams. You know, our styles look nothing alike, but he's always been inspirational because of, you know, just look at it. Then there are artists that, you know, influence me. I think Dennis Cowan, because he used to spend so much time looking over my samples. And I used to, I'm telling you, it was borderline stalking him, especially when I was trying to break in the industry. And, you know, his work has that lifelike quality to it that, you know, that I endeavor to put into my own work. Alan Davis is another big influence. And he's both an influence and an inspiration, especially if you've ever met him in person. He's a great guy as well. So, yeah, I mean, I could drag on and on about artists that I've admired, have inspired my work. It's an ongoing process. You know, like I mentioned earlier, I'm still not to the point where I go, yeah, this is it. This is my look. Mainly because I pride myself of being adaptable. I also do toy design and commercial art, and it's more based on what do you need me to do? You know, it's kind of like, what's the mission? You know, it's like I'll, you know, transform into what's necessary for the current project.
So the Optimus Prime of advertising.
That was a stretch, but, you know, I'll take it.
Now that this project has been completed, now that Horror Show is already ready to go, it's on a Kickstarter campaign. Looking back at your journey on this particular story, what's next for both of you?
Oh, well, for me, you know, it's just keep working, whatever good projects are available. Obviously, I'm going to always prioritize anything Michael wants to do because he's been amazing to work with. You know, I also mentioned I do commercial illustration. I do gaming design. It's, you know, I like being employed. Like I said, I've been doing this 35 years and you've got to stay busy. And staying busy helps you maintain things. The worst thing is to not have anything to do. I think nobody wants nobody, nobody wants, if you've ever heard that expression.
Next for me, I got the next Riot ERP coming up. And then I've been asked to put Metalhead into a trade, and then I'll do Riot ERP as a trade. And after that, we'll see. Yeah, I'd love to work with Daryl again one day, whether it's a sequel to Horror Show or something completely different. You know, Sunny Superheroes. Yeah. The big dream is to get this book in stores. I've got some irons in the fire, but it's a slow process for most people. And these days, some people are doing better on crowdfunding than they are with their books in comic book stores. So I'm just going to keep building my brand and hopefully keep doing this for a long time.
Everyone has one person that inspired them on their path to where they are today. Who was that for you?
One person. It's hard to say one person. I'm fortunate to be able to say that during the entire, from the beginning, even till now, my family has always been supportive of me wanting to do this unusual thing, especially like comics, because I'm the only one, to my knowledge, in my family tree that's ever pursued anything like this. But they believed in me, and I've always had my family's support. I remember my father, you know, who passed away in 2019. I still remember when the package from DC Comics arrived with them saying that they were interested in working with me. He was just as excited as I was. And so I'd have to say, you know, even though they don't draw, I feel that, you know, my family is very creative in other ways, and they were always supportive.
I can give you one more person than before, because Horror Show in particular, I used a lot of Steven Spielberg, the movie director's influence, yeah, especially with Jaws. And I know he did it because the Jaws mechanical creature was not very good. He didn't show a lot of the creature, a lot of the shark, till the very end. And that's what I tried to do while I was, you know, pacing Horror Show, is try to show as little of the monster and then just reveal it more and more as the story went on.
From a professional standpoint, you are both successful in your respective fields. Do you consider yourself personally successful?
I don't. I'm more than most, but I'm less than a lot. So it's a daily grind. You can't ever be satisfied with what you have. You've always got to be yearning for more and striving for more.
Success is a journey. You know, it's in all the cliches that go along with it. It's one of those things where successful, you know, it's a relative term. I think when you've gone from just an idea in your head to actually pursuing what you want to do, I feel like that's success. I mean, can you put a number, an amount? Can you quantify it? I think if you're happy with what you're pursuing, that's successful. I mean, there are people who make plenty of money and they're not happy at all. Of course, I wouldn't mind having plenty of money. Who wouldn't? But I think, do I consider myself successful? I feel like I'm getting there. It's an ongoing, never-ending battle. You know,
the reverse of success is failure. How do you deal with your failures?
Failure. I don't know. I've never failed before, so I really can't speak that. No, just kidding. I think failure, like success, I think you failed when you've given up, not when you did something and it didn't either make the money or it wasn't as bright and shiny as you had wanted it to be. Failure is when you've quit. I think about, I wanted to get into comics right out of college, and that did not happen. So, you know, I often think it took me so long to even begin my career, but I didn't realize that was helpful to give other artists inspiration to pursue their dreams. I taught at the same college I graduated from, and one thing I should tell my students is that, you know, as long as you don't quit, as long as you are committed to your journey and you can still find the fun in what you want to do, you know, you'll be successful. I mean, it's one of those things that go hand in hand. You've got to enjoy it enough so that when it gets difficult, and it will, you'll stick with it.
Perseverance. That's a good word that I'm hearing more and more recently from people that come on the show. Can you persevere in your journey as a creative person?
You have to.
The younger generation is looking at your works and they're becoming inspired to be creative in their own way, whether it's as an artist or a writer, or maybe you're inspiring them creatively. How can they inspire the generation that follows them?
Michael?
Okay. I've tried to help, you know, anybody and everybody that I can, yeah, in the business. You know, I kind of take it upon myself, you know, no matter what I'm doing, if somebody needs help, I try to show them the right way to do things. You just have to hope that people, you know, pass it forward, and, you know, that the people that I'm helping are going to turn around and help the next generation and show them the ropes, just like, you know, people showed me the ropes.
One thing I think the new generations can pass on to those that follow them is that when they're taking advice and applying it and keeping it simple, I think when it's simple, it's easier to communicate to someone else. If it gets really wordy and complicated, I get asked all the time, from convention appearances, store appearances, there are up and comers that want to know, how do I do this? How do I stick with this? And instead of looking at their art and just talking about, well, you need to work on anatomy, work on perspective, I say, start with some basic things like relax. Start there. Just relax. I think with social media, it's so easy to look at this artist over there and, wow, I'm not as good as this artist or this book over here. Ah, I'm feeling discouraged. Like, what got you interested in the first place is you enjoyed it. It wasn't something you liked. It was something you loved. So relax and remind yourself simple things, so that when you can have that foundation, you'll reach the goals, or you're attaining the goals you're shooting for. And then therefore, most likely you're going to inspire someone else, because you never know who's watching. You never know. And I feel that, and I really believe this, when you're you're seeking to attain something, somebody somewhere is watching it, whether you're going to make it or not. I've discovered that's true. I feel like I'm not alone in that, in that assessment, that there's always someone that wants to know, how do you do X, Y, Z? And once you've done it, they'll get there as well. And I feel like that process will continue from generation to generation. At least I hope so.
If your life was a comic book, what would its title be? And what would its soundtrack be?
Ooh, Michael.
I've done this one before. Yeah. I can't remember what I said, but yeah, my soundtrack would be light pop music. Yeah, I try to keep it as cheerful as possible. And I don't know what the title would be, but it'd be something like Keep Plugging Away.
For me, it's pretty easy. It would have to be, you've heard of that old hymn, Amazing Grace. Mm-hmm. That's the title and the music playing, because it wasn't skill, it wasn't ability. It had to be something else, because I mean, we were talking about the your doom scrolling, and I mean, I've been doing this a long time, and even I'm scrolling through thinking, wow, I'm working, I've been doing this a long time, and I see art that's just amazing. And it can feel a little intimidating, even to me. So I'm just imagining what it must feel like for up-and-comers. So, wow. So hopefully I can inspire others. I remember I was a show in Denver. I think it was, it's Colorado Springs. And a woman comes up to me and said, thanked me for inspiring her. I'm thinking, I don't remember. She said, you did a panel and you said to the audience, for those that want to especially do their own comics, you said, why not you? Why not you? There are other people that are doing it. Why not you? And I got that from a quarterback at the time, the Denver Broncos, Russell Wilson, would say, why not us? Well, they won the Super Bowl. They were unlikely that season. Like, why not us? So I use that same inspiration for those wanting to do comics. Like, why not you? Yeah, it might be difficult, but why not you? You'll be a success story, and hopefully, you'll pass it on. Because I think about my own journey, and then when she said, "Well, thank you for inspiring me," I said, and I saw her again, and she said, "I've got my own book out." I said, "Good. Now you keep doing what you're doing, so that someone will be inspired by what you're doing." And that's what we were talking about earlier about the generational thing. And I feel like it's happening, and that's it's good to see.
Well, Michael and Daryl, I want to thank you both for coming on the show, because unfortunately that ends this particular episode of Two Geeks Talking.
Well, thanks for having me.
Before I let you both go, where can we find you? How can we support you both? And of course, where's the Kickstarter campaign and when does it end?
I think we've got 18 more days to go. We're about 3/5 there. There's always the big rush the last couple days. I'm hoping that Kickstarter pushes this more, because they did give this the Project We Love designation. Nice. So that's always a nice positive. Meanwhile, you can find me on Twitter at StriderNolan13 or on Instagram at Michael S. Katz.
Real Bankster, like a gangster, but Bankster, dad jokes. Real Bankster on Twitter and on Instagram as GL Prime.
Well, Like I said, that is this particular episode of Two Geeks Talking. You can, of course, find this interview in 1,000 plus others. Actually, it's like 12 or 1,300 right now. I've lost count over 15 years. Give me a break here. But it is, of course, at twogeekstalking.com, TWO, or TGTmedia.com. Website's going through a revamp. Go to our YouTube channel. That is definitely always updated because I'm only one person. YouTube.com/TGTmedia. Podcast is back. You can find that at twogeekstalking.podbean.com or just search Two Geeks Talking wherever you get your podcasts. And as I say every week, everyone has a story to tell. It's up to me to help bring that out. Thanks for listening, watching on Two Geeks Talking.